they're not sitting at the dinner table like, oh, clearly Dwight, his ego is grappling with his id.
No.
And the id is winning out in this moment.
Nobody is having that conversation about okay, the office. All right. Certainly not my kids. It's really just like, he went up to him and he said, rah! You know, yeah. It's 4-year-old interpretation of what happened.
I love it. I love it.
This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro. You might know me from one scene, from one episode of The Office. Yes, I'm a television star, but it doesn't mean you should ask me for advice. Joining me today is actor, musician, comedian, and my dear friend for life, whether he likes it or not, Ed Helms. You know Ed from his memorable roles on beloved TV series The Office and the blockbuster trilogy The Hangover. He also stars in a new movie that I also play a role in called Together, Together. Ed, welcome.
Hey, Tig. Let's get this over with. Come on.
You know, when I said welcome, I caught you halfway through a yawn, and I want to let people know why I think you might have been yawning, and it's because when I was trying to introduce you, I messed up every line of your introduction, and I had to keep going back and redoing it as though you were a stranger and some unknown person from The Office and a Hangover.
But listeners won't know that because you're going to edit the introduction into a beautifully seamless Casey Kasem-like reel. So
I would hope. I don't know.
All right.
Who knows? We might not even air this.
Good.
I might just, this oh. might be my ploy to see your mug and talk to you. Ed.
Yeah.
My 2 4-year-olds are obsessed with The Office. Have I
what?
Told you this?
That's inappropriate. They shouldn't be watching The Office. This is scandalous. What are you talking about?
Are young kids into it? Because I was a little shocked when I came home one day and they were watching The Office, and my reaction was, wait, why are they watching The Office? And Stephanie said, the past week they've become obsessed with The Office.
That strikes me as very strange.
I don't know about preschoolers being into it.
No, I mean, I definitely am surprised at how young the kids are that, like, approach me in airports and scream Nard Dog at me and so forth. I don't think I've ever met a toddler who's into The Office.
Well, there's two, and they both live in my house.
Well, you're doing something wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to judge you as a parent, but this is terrible.
To be fair, I don't think they get at all what they're watching. It's just that they can see and sense that comedy is happening, and somebody will say something on the show, and then they'll repeat it, and they'll say things like, he said there was a fish. Like, there was some sort of fish thing that happened, and I can't even remember what it was, but they just repeat it. And,
right.
Or they'll mishear something and they'll say a word wrong and they'll think that sounds funny. But
yep.
They love your show. And this is no offense to you, but it's not like The Office is just playing on our TV 24 hours a day, Ed.
What?
You know Why? I love you. You know I love you. We can't play The Office because The Hangover is always playing.
Oh, of course.
Which they don't like. They don't care about the Hangover.
They're not into it. They don't find that funny. Well,
yeah.
Good.
Now, Ed, let's talk about the movie that you star in, Together, Together.
Yeah.
And before we talk about that, can I talk about how hard you made me laugh filming that movie?
There were some pretty big giggles on that shoot day.
And I can't help but say it, but your stupid face, that's what it was.
And that's what you kept saying that day. I was just about to bring that up. I was like, am I funny or do I just have this really stupid face that
it's
makes
both.
Tig laugh?
The face expressions you make, your delivery, your comedic abilities are so off the charts. And I knew it about you, but like to be in an actual movie with you, I couldn't handle it. So thank you for that.
I'm enjoying this podcast very much. These are very nice things you're saying. I really appreciate
it. You know that. I feel that way. And I was thrilled to be in that movie.
It was fun, right?
Yeah, it's been so well received. You play a single man on a quest to have a child through a surrogate. What drew you to that?
The script was just wonderful. It was so warm and genuine and elegant. And it was like a beautiful prairie. It was very simple. And the concept was very simple. And yet it still felt like, from an acting standpoint, like a very complex challenge, I think, maybe just to fit into that simplicity. And it was funny. It's very sweet and funny. And as we filled out the cast, it just became this incredible team, with the notable exception of you, obviously.
Obviously.
You should know, I fought tooth and nail to keep you from being in this movie.
I know you did. And yeah. I actually appreciate that.
Yeah.
I know that you've tried to keep me out of every job that I've ever landed, and I'm still flattered by it.
I'm on a one-man quest to just keep you from getting jobs.
It works.
I don't know. It works.
Frankly, it works. Congrats to you.
Just so many funny people. It's such a great Fred Melamed. I don't know. Just all these sort of surprising, wonderful people.
It's solid, and it's very naturally funny. And of course, your stupid face is in there. And
yeah, my stupid face is all over this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
It's a lot of my stupid face.
Yeah. Edward, you've talked about the expectations that fans sometimes have and how people are surprised when they realize that your personality is a little more guarded or contemplative compared to, you know, some of the roles that you've played. And how do you navigate those potentially uncomfortable situations? Not that I've ever experienced.
Do you mean just fans that really want to, like, hang out or part, like?
Yeah, meet you at whatever your character, the level of character they've seen in The Hangover, yes, in The Office.
Yes. Well, it's very interesting because I've been very fortunate to be in a variety of projects, TVs and shows and films and things, and play different characters. And there's something, it's kind of funny, you can get a vibe off of a fan based on what their favorite thing is or the thing that they recognize you from. So like,
yeah,
if somebody puts me in a headlock and starts giving me a noogie and trying to force me to do vodka Red Bull shots or something, pretty sure that's going to be a Hangover fan, and versus like someone who wants to like sit down and have a cup of tea and discuss the latest Terry Gross interview on Fresh Air. That's maybe more of an Office fan vibe. Not to stereotype, but there is a funny difference there. And but what they have in common is an unquenchable desire to scream at me in airports. I don't know why this is. Maybe it's because I have a big stupid face, but for some reason, fans think that I will love it when they scream "Nard Dog" or "Stew" or like "Where's your tooth?" or "Hey, you got your tattoo removed?" All these things. And you know what? God bless them. I have no ill will.
They think it's the first time you've heard it. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You've never heard that.
Yeah.
In one of my stand-up specials, I talked about how in the airport one time I was on a travelator and I was passing opposite this guy and he just turned and he goes, "Yo, Tig, what's up?" or something that casual.
Right.
And I was so blown away by to the point where I couldn't stop thinking about him and how he needed nothing else from that moment. Just, "Yo, Tig, what's up?"
Yeah, that's very weird.
It was so weird. Yeah, I became his biggest fan in that moment. But
John Krasinski had this great story about being on the train system in Boston. I think they call it the T.
And
he's riding on the train, and this like burly construction worker guy is like, "Hey, just want to let you know I'm a big fan of The Office. It's really funny." And then John is like, "Oh, really? Hey, thanks a lot, man. That's great." And goes to shake his hand, and the guy's like, "Hey, whoa, it's all good." And he like backs up.
Makes him feel like a dirty freak.
Yeah, I just love that story because it's like you can almost never get it right with a fan, right? Yeah. There's always some misstep. You're either too cold and aloof, or you're too warm and like it freaks them out because you're too gracious or something. Right. But that's a pretty cool move. I like that. I like this guy. Hey, Tig, how's it going?
Yo, what's up?
Yo, what's up?
Yeah. And that's it. And real casual.
Yeah. And didn't even probably like kept looking forward.
Oh, he didn't look back. He didn't look back at me. He did not. And I was looking back at him the whole time because I thought he was doing some hilarious bit and was going to wink or laugh or something. Never looked back. And everybody writes in claiming that they're the Travelator guy. And my feeling is if you're the Travelator guy, you're not going to write in and tell
never.
Me you're the Travelator. There's no way. He's never even – he doesn't watch my specials. He happened upon me when he was flipping through looking for The Office. And now, you've given graduation speeches at a few different colleges and universities, which is essentially sharing advice with people.
Sure.
So how do you approach that responsibility, and why on earth did anyone ask you to speak at their college or university?
I can answer the first question. I have no idea about the second question, but I think commencement speeches are some of the great moments of connection between interesting people and the world. So there's a great tradition of commencement speeches. The first one I did was Knox College. It was a really great challenge because it kind of forces you to dig a little and think about what you think is important and what do you think young people should know going into the world. Mm-hmm. And so, Knox College was the first one. And then the next one, that one went pretty well. So then I think the next one I did was Cornell. And that's obviously because Andy Bernard went to Cornell and talked it up on The Office all the time. And I think that the senior class that year who votes on the commencement speaker was just like, "Let's get the Nard Dog." but I also had a track record. And so they were like, "Okay, he's not going to be an idiot. Like, he has a stupid face, but he's not going to say anything too stupid."
With his stupid face.
Yeah. But that one was funny because they were like, you know, I did a lot of research in my first one and I discovered that the ideal commencement speech is like 13 minutes long, which to me is like even a little bit long in my opinion. But Cornell required 25 minutes, which was insane. I mean, that's like you're going to guarantee people nodding off. It's like that's the hardest to talk about something serious or with any gravity for 25 minutes on a hot day in a big stadium. It just seems like
it's a lot to ask.
But I did it and I had a ton of fun. And there were like 10,000 people there. It was super cool.
Do you think I have any chance of being asked to do a commencement speech at Cornell because I got a plant-based nutrition certificate from eCornell University? Do you think they would have me?
From what?
eCornell, the online school for Cornell.
Is that true?
Yeah. During the pandemic, I got a plant-based nutrition certificate that I could print right off of my own printer that said, "Yep, she did it."
I have bad news for you, Tig.
Oh, no. Do I want to hear this live on?
Yeah. You got scammed.
What?
There is no eCornell. There's no eCornell. There's no plant-based nutrition course. I don't know how much you paid for this.
No, eCornell is actually a real website and school, and I really did get a certificate there. It's hanging on my wall.
That's true. That is true.
Ed, it's now time for us to answer some listener questions.
Oh, great. All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Our first question is on office etiquette. So I figured you'd be just the right person to talk to about this. All right.
Great.
Question one comes from Triggered by Nail Clippers. Mm. Triggered by Nail Clippers writes, I believe my coworker comes into the office only to clip his nails. I work in a cubicle environment with no doors, and the staff are minimal and unfriendly, meaning there's no talking or noise to cover the sound. Am I wrong for consistently being triggered by this person clipping and digging at their nails for a solid 10 minutes every day? The start time is unpredictable, but Monday morning and Thursday afternoon are most common. My real worry is how will I react if a nail lands on my workspace? I don't carry weapons, but I do have a stapler.
Well, right. It sounds like this person works not so much in a cubicle environment, but a cuticle environment, if I may.
Absolutely, you may.
Thank you. This is a really funny thing because this is a sticking point between my wife and me, which is that I am not at all bothered by her clipping her nails, but she forces me to like drive to another city to clip my nails because that sound, it's like chewing food for some people. It is like deeply triggering. And I now, you know, being married to one of those people, I have acquired a great deal of understanding and sympathy for that because it's not a rational thing. Like, we shouldn't necessarily be freaked out by that, but we all have those things. They're all, it's like, yeah. So why judge? I feel terrible for this person.
Can you imagine if your wife worked with this person?
Oh my God.
With this nail?
It would be over.
Yeah.
My wife would have stapled him by now.
Yeah.
So I think she should fire her stapler at the guy and
obviously, yes.
Then maybe like leave an anonymous note on his desk that's like, your fingernail clipping is really, really gross.
It's not as cuticle as you think it is.
Exactly. It's just not cuticle. So let's clip this in the bud and just nail this situation.
Stop. Here's what I would do. Of course, I don't want somebody clipping their nails in the office, or I don't want somebody's dried nail flying into my cubicle. But if somebody did this, what I would do is I would put on a hazmat suit, obviously, have some gloves, and I would collect all of the nails from the floor. And then I would staple the nails to their desk.
Oh, that's good. See, what I love about that is that it's not passive aggressive at all.
Yeah, right.
It's very direct.
It's just very direct. There's good. No confusion because you're the one with the stapler.
Yeah.
And they're the one with the nails.
I thought you were going to say that you were going to put on the hazmat suit and then just walk up to him while he's clipping his nails and like hand him some files and be like, can you go over this? And then he'll be like, why are you in a hazmat suit? Oh, because you're clipping your nails and it's disgusting.
That'd be too direct.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, there's just something fun about like the theatrical use of a hazmat suit in an office environment.
Oh, for sure. I can't decide if you should staple the nails to the desk while the guy is sitting there or when they go to lunch and then come back and then
stumble upon. Glue them to his computer monitor or something.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the stapler really says that was from me.
Yeah.
The person with the stapler.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Triggered by Nail Clippers. Good luck. And part of me really hopes your actual name is Triggered by Nail Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more questions after a very short break. And we're back. Our next question involves what you might call a rich person problem. Girl Friday writes, "Hi Tig, I work with an eccentric billionaire, and my job is to convert his crazy, like a fox ideas into actual business projects. Unfortunately, he has a lot of ideas, and he is much more enthusiastic about starting new projects than finishing things. As a result, I'm overloaded and exhausted. My colleagues drink the Kool-Aid, but I'm over it. How do I tell him that this is unsustainable and I'm burning out? Or should I just quit? Sincerely, Girl Friday." What if it was sincerely triggered by nail clippers? Wouldn't that be a funny twist?
The billionaire is the person clipping their nails in their cubicle?
Or the billionaire has a lot of people working in the office in cubicles.
Sure. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a classic, this job's not a good fit for you situation.
Yeah, it sounds like a dead-end job.
Yeah. I mean, well, there are obviously a lot of people there that have drank the Kool-Aid. And so it seems like a good fit for them, but not a good fit for this person.
Not for Girl Friday.
Not for Girl Friday.
Hightail it out of there, Girl Friday.
Turn around and just
bolt. Get
going.
Grab your stapler and run.
Get your nail clippers.
Yeah. I mean, unless you have real interest in moving up in the job, and there's potential for growth for you, and you're willing to deal with this person. Maybe if there's another job where you could be working with somebody that's more of your point person rather than your wackadoodle billionaire. I'm so curious why this person is a billionaire.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too. And also, like, if you're a billionaire, why are you still trying to start a bunch of companies? Like, why aren't you just drinking mojitos on the beach? isn't that what all responsible billionaires do?
I guess so.
Donate your money to charity and then be the fantasy that we all want to be as billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like billionaires have a responsibility to
go relax.
Yeah. Like, you owe it to us. If you're going to be a billionaire, if you're going to take up that huge of a share of the world's wealth, you know, at least be my vision of a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Do me the courtesy of, like, drinking it up.
Ed, how far off are you from being a billionaire?
$3.
Oh, okay.
Can I borrow $3?
Ed, I would give you so much more.
If you say yes, I'll be a billionaire.
I would give you more than $3. However, you have kept me out of job after job after job. So I don't have the cash to be giving you to help you ring the billion-dollar bell. All right, Girl Friday, let us know how it goes with your boss. But hightail it out of there. You're not happy. Our next question comes from a listener in Cleveland. Dana writes, "I have struggled with how to tell people in different walks of my life, from coworkers and managers to friends that call me dear, honey, and even sunshine. It makes me cringe, especially at work, and I have yet to ask any of them to please not do it anymore. How do I do this without offending? Particularly someone in management who is much younger than me and calls me honey. I know this doesn't bother some people, but I have always reserved my terms of endearments for children and animals and not my friends and coworkers." Oh.
Man, that sucks.
Yeah. It's not appropriate. I mean, this is the time to be very, I mean, you could be passive aggressive about somebody clipping nails, even though you probably shouldn't be. But this one you should be more direct about.
Yeah, of course. It is very hard to assert boundaries, especially with superiors, but everyone's better off for it. And I think it's about finding the language and just kind of steeping in it a little bit. I find if I have to say something difficult to somebody, I actually like rehearse it a bunch. Maybe that's just because I'm an actor, but I wind up saying it a bunch, like driving in my car, like, how might I say this? What's the way that's most clear, least aggressive, least offensive, most empathetic. But, you know, when you're in a situation where you're talking to a superior, and even more so a superior who's younger than you, that's a lot.
I wonder if there is a, you know, an HR department that you can get in touch with and share this issue with.
Yep. I like that.
And I mean, as far as your friends that call you that, that feels like something that you would just have to explain. I mean, if your friends are calling you dear honey and sunshine and you do not like it, you have to tell them. And if anything, maybe if you're not wanting to be terribly direct, which I'm not trying to encourage you to not be, but if you do talk to HR at your job, maybe share the story of you contacting HR, share that story with your friends, and that will give them a clue. Mm-hmm. That, oh, because I don't like being called names other than my name, I'm not dear, I'm not honey, and I'm not sunshine. Mm-hmm. I talk to HR about it, and maybe that'll create a conversation.
I have another. This might sound a little bit hokey, but I had a therapist many years ago who had this advice that I like. The support sandwich. So you say something supportive, then you say the thing that you need to get out, and then you conclude with something supportive. So a version in this case might be like, hey, Bob, I really enjoy working for you. You're a wonderful boss. Unfortunately, I feel somewhat demeaned when words like honey or baby or
sunshine, those
kinds of words make me feel a little less than I want to feel around here. So I'm hoping maybe you can stop doing that. And by the way, that's a great shirt. That's a bad example.
Or maybe I'm hoping you can stop doing that as the really great manager that you are. Maybe compliment their job skill.
You can maybe even rise to even greater heights as a manager.
Mm-hmm. Dana, that's what we think. We hope it helps. We know it's a tough spot to be in. Also, side note, let me be the first to thank you, Dana. Ed, here's our last question. Maya writes, what books should I read?
That's it?
That's it. I don't know if I've ever gotten such a simple question. Well, my go-to always is, and it's not just because she very unfortunately passed away recently, but it's Beverly Cleary's Ribsy.
Hmm.
I read that as a kid, and I turned in a paper about Ribsy, the skinny dog, up until my teacher in seventh grade said this was not on the book list.
Ribsy?
Ribsy.
Huh.
Yeah, yep.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a good one. Yeah. Is that an actual children's book, or is it a like young YA thing?
It's a children's book. Okay. I should not have been turning in book reports about Ribsy. Okay.
Ribsy. I'm worried about a dog named Ribsy, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I just read a stunningly beautiful book called The Overstory, which I highly recommend. It's dense.
What's it about?
And very, very long. It's really a sort of sweeping epic novel, and it tells a handful of narratives. Each story involves a tree. And I know that sounds weird, but like the tree is a sort of turning point or a very meaningful part of a family's life or many generations even that grew up around a certain tree. And the...
We're trying to sell her on this book.
I know. It sounds really boring, doesn't it? But it's very, it's very, very beautiful. It's a wonderful book. Other than that, maybe more along the Tig suggestion, I would suggest Circus Ship. The Circus Ship, which is, have you read that one? Did you read that to your kids?
No.
Oh,
no,
you got to get, this is truly one of the best kids books I've ever found. I love it. The Circus Ship.
And wait, what is the name of your tree book that everybody wandered off and got a snack while you were describing?
It's called The Overstory.
Yes, you were oversharing about the overstory.
Yeah, exactly. I think it won like a Pulitzer Prize or something, but no big deal.
A Latin Grammy.
Yeah, exactly.
I also would love to recommend a book called I'm Just a Person. That is phenomenal. Mm. It's a really great book.
Sounds very literal.
That I wrote.
You wrote that?
I wrote that.
Fantastic.
I wrote I'm Just a Person. Yeah, you can get it on audio books as well. The hardcover and soft cover. Mm. It's really good. You'll laugh, you'll cry. I'm Just a Person by Tig Notaro.
Mm.
Anyway, happy reading, Maya. Ed, that's all the listener questions I have for you.
Great.
I think we solved a lot of problems today, don't you?
I do, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We might have created some more problems for people.
Yeah,
I hope
right,
not.
But that's where people have to write in again, and then we
sure.
keep this machine going.
Great.
There's one more segment I need you to help me with before
Great.
You go, okay? It's called Advice of Yesteryear.
When Jerry brags about taking Ginny out, he learns that she dates all the boys.
So as we see now, menstruation is just one routine step in a normal and natural cycle.
How do you choose a date? Well, one thing you can consider is look.
I did everything you said, but my boss still hasn't asked me to lunch.
Ed, this is where we take a real question from an advice column of yesteryear, and we try to do a little better. This question comes from Mrs. Elizabeth Thompson's column, Heart and Home Problems, dated 1922. Dear Miss Thompson, what do you think of that accent I was using?
I'm thrown by it. I don't know. Is it an old person? Is it old because it's an old-timey thing, or is it actually a letter from an old person?
No, it was actually, what if it was the moment my voice shifted to
old
an
person?
Elderly? Yeah. Yeah. And we caught it on the podcast.
What year is this again? 1922? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It was quite a while ago.
All right. Great Depression.
All right, dear
Let's go.
Yes. Dear Mrs. Thompson, I have a young lady friend I have known about 8 weeks, and she is a whole lot of company to me at work. Although I've never had a date with her. At home. I want to give her a present. Could you suggest something nice? I cannot think of anything except a box of candy. Do you think she would appreciate it? I will like it very much if you suggest other things. Signed, Crazy Kid.
Crazy Kid?
Yeah, spelled K-I-D-D-E.
Oh, wow. This
yeah,
is interesting.
I have to be honest that this kid didn't sound so crazy.
How do you mean?
So these days, crazy kids look and seem and act really crazy, whereas this crazy kid just wrote a letter to an advice columnist saying that this woman is a whole lot of company at work, and I want to give her a present, and all I can think of is a box of candy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a crazy kid.
Well, we hope not. Maybe he's kind of psycho, but... Okay, so let's go with that. He's not crazy. Maybe he just thought that would be a cute name to sign off on.
It
He's
seems
not
like
actually...
somebody rubbed his head with some knuckles and went, ah, you crazy kid.
Yeah,
and then he
exactly.
said, all right, that's, yeah, that's
Yeah, he's
said.
Like typing up the letter. He's like, I sure am crazy. I want to get her a box of candies. I mean, I'm one crazy son of a gun
Ah, you crazy
here.
Kid.
Yeah, crazy. He's like giving himself a noogie. Yeah, crazy kid, you.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the other side of that nail clipping situation. And like the woman that he has a crush on is seething on the other side of the old like oak cubicles in 1922. And she's over there just like, oh, this guy is so annoying. He keeps clipping his fingernails. And he's like, would you like a box of candy, young lady? Do you know what the response was? Or what was the actual advice that was given in this situation?
Ed, the answer is, I am sure the girl would appreciate candy. She would also like flowers or a book.
Well, here now we're back to the whole witch book thing.
Oh, God. Do you want to recommend another one?
Crazy Kid Needs Book Advice. So... What was published? What was, I mean, there was
she
Mark Twain.
She would also like flowers or a book.
Perhaps you could give her a new set of bloomers.
But don't forget to also get her a bonnet. She would likely want a bonnet.
Oh, I know that any working woman of the time, of these times, would be thrilled with a monogrammed thimble. And I can recommend a thimblist who hand casts monogrammed thimbles, because, of course, that is a delight.
And before we go, just make sure to get her some new shiny buckles for her shoes, her wooden shoes. Ed, thank you so much for being on the show.
Aw, Tig, I love it. Honestly, any chance to hang out with you is a true privilege. And I hope that we get to do it more soon without all this podcast baggage. Can we just get a sandwich?
Are you vaccinated?
Yeah.
An emotional sandwich. Isn't that what your therapist said?
Oh, yeah. No, the support sandwich.
Oh, support sandwich. Yeah. I guess an emotional sandwich is like stuffing down your feelings and maybe overeating something. Do you have anything to promote?
Yes.
And you can see the numbers go through the roof?
Yes. I would like all of Don't Ask Tig's listeners to please tune in to my new TV show that I co-created with Mike Schur, creator of Parks and Rec and The Good Place and on and on. And then our other buddy, Sierra Teller Ornelas, who is our showrunner. We all created this show together called Rutherford Falls that will be premiering on Peacock, which is the NBC Universal streaming platform that's free. You can get it free. You don't have to pay subscriptions. Oh. Like everything else, just go get Peacock, and you can watch Rutherford Falls. And then, of course, our movie, Together Together, starring the legendary Tig Notaro and also myself.
Wow. That's awesome. Finally, something good has come your way.
There's something else I have to promote. I'm also going to be on a podcast called Don't Ask Tig. Right now, right this second, as you're listening to this, I'm promoting the thing that you're hearing. So there you go.
Ed, that's incredible. Congrats to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I love you dearly and your stupid, stupid face. One of the funniest people alive.
I love you too, Tig. And I also happen to think you're an unbelievably hilarious and wonderful person.
Well, of course I am. I have a podcast. All right. Well, I'll see you soon, Ed.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Later.
One more thing. I have a very special request for my listeners. Do you have a secret that you need my advice to deal with? What's the secret you have never verbalized to anyone, maybe not even to yourself? I want to hear it. Call 833-275-8444. 833-275-8444. Ask Tig 4 and leave me an anonymous voicemail and I might play it on the show. Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Shayna Deloria, and Ryan Lohr. Our editors are Phyllis Fletcher and Beth Perlman. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Johnny Vince Evans and Eric Romani. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Marianne Ways. Production support from Pizza Shark. Our theme music is Friend in Tig by Edie Burkell and Kyle Crusham. And Listen to Your Heart by Edie Burkell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Concept developed by Tracy Mumford. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana, and I'll tell Becky.